acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 67, Handwork. Sunday, January 25th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: Ever-Expanding Skill Set, Yarn Lover at Large, Gratitude Journal, and so forth. Hello, everyone. It's nice to be back with Yarns at Yin Hu listeners again. It's been an eventful week since I recorded last. We've had a mild snowstorm. We had about 6 or 7 inches here in the Poconos. And unfortunately, I was not here at Yin Hu for the beautiful snowfall, but I will talk a little bit about that later. And just this morning, I found that we are expecting a considerable amount of snowfall a little bit later in the week, and that will certainly interfere with my busy January and February programs where I work. I plan an event and then a snow date for each of these events. So far, 2 events have gone off without interference from snow, but I think event number 3 is going to present some challenges, so we'll see how it goes. I'd like to welcome 2 new listeners who've introduced themselves on the board. Tracy, who is Mrs. TN 2006 from Henderson, Tennessee, and Nauda Girl, who is Erica. Welcome, and thanks for joining the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry. This morning, I was checking iTunes reviews, and I decided to do a scan of a few other countries besides the U.S. site where I'm usually checking, and I found 3 new iTunes reviews. Thank you so much to Dusty Tree Knits, who left an iTunes review on the U.S. site, to Juju Maya Zoe, who left a review on the Canada site, and to Kato2309, who introduced herself on the board just recently and left a wonderful iTunes review on the Germany iTunes site. Thank you so much. It means so much that listeners take the time to write a few words about their experience in listening or leave a rating on iTunes. It is so nice to hear from listeners and to read what they have to say about their experience with the podcast. Thank you so much. Ever-expanding skill set. How is it going with your pantry? Do you feel like you have a power pantry yet? There are still a few days left in January to work on this month's theme, which is organization. In the last episode, I asked a question about what items do you like to stock up on at a can-can sale, and I didn't really put much thought into the fact that a can-can sale might just really be an East Coast U.S. supermarket thing. I don't know. And I didn't get too much feedback about can-can sales in other parts of the country, so I'm guessing that it might not be such a widespread thing as I thought. But some folks did contribute some comments about things they like to stock up on, in particular canned beans, different kinds of canned items that are good to use in soups and stews, and versatile ingredients, I suppose, that you could work into any kind of a recipe. My particular favorite when it goes on sale, I can never resist, Annie's mac and cheese or shells and cheese or any of those varieties. I know they're not, you know, the best thing. And just because it says Annie's or it's organic pasta, it doesn't mean it's a wonderful, nutritious meal. But I can't resist them. And when I'm home alone and I don't feel like pulling out all the stops on a meal or for a quick lunch or something, if I'm home from work and Samuel's around, I always try to talk him into Annie's mac and cheese. So that's kind of my guilty pleasure and the thing I like to stock up on at a can sale. For today's segment about Power Pantry, I thought I would talk a little bit about staying organized versus getting organized. There's been a lot of conversation in the news media and on a lot of other podcasts about cleaning out, paring down items, essentially getting organized, which I think is great. And that's certainly where you need to start if you feel like you're not at a very organized point in your life, or your belongings have accumulated, or you need to downsize for some reason or another. But I think something that's often missed in discussion about organization is how to stay organized. Once things are organized, they can easily get out of hand if we return to habits that are messy or sloppy. And I know I've talked in a previous episode, I think I had an episode a while back called Housekeeping for the Apocalypse or something like that, and I talked about the difference between clutter and a mess. This comes directly from my mom, Kathleen, who taught us the difference when we were growing up between clutter and a mess. A mess is a project that's happening, something that is in progress, some items that are out and taking up surface space because you are actively engaged in working with them. That's a mess. Messes are legitimate. Your mess should be honored. And when you are no longer working on that thing, you need to clean up your mess. Clutter is, on the other hand, just an accumulation of things that are not being used. They're not necessarily being stored. They've just been set there or left there or piled up, and that needs to be eliminated because clutter in a space kind of leads to clutter in your mind or clutter of your emotional or psychological state, in my opinion. And that's how I was brought up to think about caring for your space and I guess the whole process of housekeeping and how it should work. That you should honor a mess, you should work to avoid clutter. And one of the ways that you can do that or to maintain organization once you've established it is to think very carefully about putting things away. And when you do it, and where you put them. One of my stumbling points in terms of housekeeping is that I like to have clear surfaces. I try to avoid this clutter. And in my haste to disperse clutter, I will sometimes put items away or store them by shoving them into space haphazardly. So I'll clean my cupboards and then I'll have things out to cook and then I'll just shove them back wherever they will go. Or I'll quickly try to clean up a mess by just shoving it into anywhere where I can close the door on it. Not so smart, not very effective in terms of true organization. So a space may look tidy, but if there's clutter lurking in the background, then it's really not so tidy as it may appear. And I thought that I'd talk a little bit about what I think is the key to staying organized in the kitchen as a practice, which is mise en place, or your mise. And this comes from the culinary process of having all of the ingredients that you need to make a dish or make several dishes in the case of a line cook, chopped, ready in small containers, and then all of the things that you would discard, like the containers that those items came in, any waste material that you're throwing away, all of that has been removed. So a line cook, for example, is not dicing a pepper at his station in order to add it to a dish. All of that preparation has been done beforehand, either by him or by some kind of prep chef or something like that, so that all that's on the counter is a container of diced peppers, and you throw those in. I try to keep this practice of mise in mind when I'm working in my kitchen because I have very little counter space. If I'm baking, for example, and I have the flour and the sugar and the baking powder and the baking soda and the salt and the butter, and I'm peeling apples, that's pretty much my counter space. Until I clean that up, I can't roll out a crust. I can't really do anything. So I've begun a practice, and I've tried to maintain a practice of looking at my recipe, removing the items that I need from my pantry, measuring out ingredients, and then putting those items away. It helps me keep everything a lot cleaner, number one, because I'm not grabbing boxes or glass containers with dirty hands. And it helps keep my counter clear. It helps me stay organized and prepare food a lot more quickly. If there's something I need, for example, my bag of flour might stay out on the counter because I know I'm not done with that and I need to flour my surface later on, then I do that. But I try to remove items from the refrigerator, from the pantry, measure them out, have them at the ready, and then put the containers away. Recently, I purchased a step stool at a vintage shop. It's one of those stools that has a few slide-out steps and then a seat, so it takes up a small amount of space in the kitchen, but it's very handy for me to reach cupboards. And that's one of the reasons why I will sometimes be lazy about putting items away. If they're hard to reach, I might try to leave them on the counter or shove them to the end of the counter rather than put them away. So having the step stool makes it very easy to put things away quickly and clean up my space. What are your tips for not getting but staying organized? Hopefully you'll be willing to share them on the Ravelry board or on social media. You can use hashtag PowerPantry. That would be a really cool way to share your tips for staying organized with others. It seems like a lot of folks are very interested in organization in January, so I'm excited that Yarns at Yanhu listeners are a part of that push toward a more organized space and a more serene set of surroundings. I think that helps our overall mood and the way we interact with others, as well as just being efficient and effective. Yarn Lover at Large. I have been wanting to discuss two different items on the podcast, and this week, finally, there has been a convergence of these two different things, so I thought it was the ideal time to talk about it. The first thing is that just before Thanksgiving, I finalized my application for a technology grant. This was an opportunity presented by the superintendent at the school district where I work for proposals related to technology and how that technology would be used in the classroom, how it would be measured, etc. And I seized that opportunity to write a proposal for some very old and well-respected technology, like drop spindles, small looms, knitting needles, Lucette, etc. And just before the holidays, when we left for the nearly two-week break, I found out that my proposal was one of the many proposals selected for funding. In the coming days, I will be receiving a shipment of a lot of equipment from the woolery, and all of this will be put into use next year for a seminar program in handwork in the fiber arts. The district where I work has a very well-established tradition of students working with their hands and working at craft. This occurs primarily in woodworking, metalworking. We also have a very well-established foods and nutrition class and a lot of art classes. But the fiber arts has not been a formal part of the curriculum at all. So I will be working on a curriculum for a seminar group, which is on a pull-out basis. Students will elect to take part in this, and they'll meet 2 to 4 times per month for 45 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on whether they're willing to give up a portion of their lunch break or not. And we'll work on various things having to do with the fiber arts and employing our hands to make things by hand. There are a number of students already involved in an after-school basis or students I've just been working with one-on-one, but this will be an opportunity to develop that curriculum. So I am beyond excited, just so gratified to know that the folks who are making decisions honor this kind of thing and that there are students who are enthusiastic about handwork. Though I know a lot of the skills that I want to teach, and I've done some one-on-one kinds of teaching, I really wanted an experience that would help me think about a curriculum, a year-long curriculum for this kind of work. And it's tricky because I don't have dedicated time with the students. I don't even get to see them necessarily every week. So I need to be very judicious about how time is used and how I can bring as much of an understanding as possible to the students who'd like to practice handwork. And so I enrolled in a sheep to shawl course with the Fibercraft Studio. Fibercraft Studio is part of the Threefold Campus, and it's a Waldorf campus in Chestnut Ridge, New York. It's just above the New Jersey-New York border. You may know that Waldorf schools have curriculum in handwork and handwork teachers as part of their teaching staff. And so at the Fibercraft Studio, there is a lot of attention paid to helping teachers develop skills and then think about how they will work with students in developing those skills. And they could be of various different ages. I learned that there isn't necessarily a fixed curriculum, but there are guidelines, and then teachers can work within them depending on their own abilities and their own interests and what they think will work best for their students. The Sheep to Shawl course is primarily for Waldorf educators, but it's open to outsiders like me. And it is a year-long course that meets one Saturday a month and works from the fleece of a sheep to a finished shawl or garment. something substantial. It doesn't have to be a shawl. In fact, I am determined that I will work on a garment because I think that will be a greater challenge for me. And I'd like to challenge myself in every way possible as I'm working through this course. I've been looking forward to this for some time. I visited the Fibercraft Studio last spring for a natural dyeing class and was just intrigued by the surroundings, by their approach to teaching, and by the camaraderie that developed among the participants, even in the very short 2-hour program that I attended. I was not disappointed when I attended the first session of Sheep to Shawl this Saturday. It was a very dicey thing to get myself to the Sheep to Shawl class because there was some impending snow that first seemed like it would be nothing, but then seemed like it could keep me from getting there on Saturday morning. So I traveled up to Chestnut Ridge quite late in the evening on Friday and stayed in a monastic little dormitory room and was able to awaken to about 8 inches of beautiful snowfall and take part in this incredible first day of the course. My morning began with a visit with a listener that I had planned ahead of time and was able to keep in my schedule, even though there was this crazy amount of snow. But I met Deb, also known as Little Red Hen, at a local coffee shop, and we had time to meet each other and talk about our knitting and make some plans for maybe future times when I'm up in that area. And Deb was so generous in giving me some items for giveaways for the podcast. I will be talking about those a little bit later in the year because I have plans for them. Back to the course at Fibercraft Studio. There are two facilitators, Chris and Sono, who are very experienced and dedicated handwork teachers. And then there are a variety of different participants, some like me who are taking the Sheep to Shawl class for the first time, but there are also many returning students who've done the class once or several times before and just love the experience and the camaraderie. They are mostly educators, but some different occupations, different walks of life, certainly different levels of experience with fiber arts. And so we make quite an eclectic group. The location, Orchard House, on the campus of the Threefold Center is just this beautiful and serene space filled with all kinds of tools and materials and just this overwhelming sense of calm and, I don't know, just like a gentle nudge toward productivity. The day has a very well-established flow to it, and it's so well established it doesn't even seem as though the facilitators are setting the tone for the day. It's established even beyond what the facilitators are telling us that we're going to do. There are a lot of snacks and eating and little breaks in between work time. And then I think as we continue, work time will be also broken into some writing or thinking or a little more theoretical bit of practice. We were introduced to the fleece of hazel. The Fibercraft Studio purchases fleeces from Jenny Jump Farm, which is not very far actually from where I live in the Poconos. It's in Hope, New Jersey, and they raise about 20 to 30 Jacob sheep. So it's a beautiful fleece with a lot of variation in terms of color. Even staple length of the fibers is different. And the folks at the Fibercraft Studio purchase a number of different fleeces each spring. So while we were working with one fleece that was completely untouched, it had just been skirted and rolled up into cotton and stored, there was yet another fleece that had been washed. So we had different levels of preparation. We talked about spinning as a very ancient kind of technology, and we worked on spinning with tools that predated our world spindles, notably a stick with a notch in it, and also a stick and a stone used for the weight. And I spun some raw fleece, like right from the lock in the grease, into a nice single working with this stick and stone spindle. And then we put our own spindles together and worked on spindling with something that was a little more consistent. We took fleece home to wash as homework, and it's just a beautiful beginning to a year of learning and thinking about working with our hands. So I'm just enamored of our facilitators and all of the other folks in the class. I will provide a few photographs of the experience on the blog and as the cover photo for this episode, and I look forward to sharing more about this experience over the course of the year. Gratitude Journal. In the last episode, I announced Yarns at Yinhu's first read-along, which starts on February 1st and will focus on Housekeeping, a short novel by Marilyn Robinson. So many listeners have expressed interest in this read-along. I'm so gratified and very excited. So February 1st is the start date. This is not a new book, so it should be relatively easy to get a copy, maybe a used copy, by shopping online or maybe by selecting one from your local library. I didn't mention, but I've been extremely grateful for interaction with Susie, who is Polka Dot Knits on Ravelry. Susie and I have been going back and forth in some discussion of Housekeeping in advance of the read-along opening up. Since I've never hosted a read-along before, I thought it would be nice to get some practice in the kinds of things that might be discussed. And Susie's enthusiasm for the read-along and for the book itself has just been truly infectious. And over the last week, we've had some really nice exchanges about topics in the book. And it's convinced me that even though it's a short novel, it's incredibly rich in its meanings and potential topics for discussion or discovery. So thank you so much, Polka Dot Knits. There's no way to repay you already for all of the tips and advice and suggestions and ideas that you've given me. So thanks so much. Two other Yarns at Yinhu listeners have provided some prizes recently for giveaways. Thank you very much to Kay Connors and also to Little Red Hen, who I mentioned in the previous segment. Since Valentine's Day is coming up, I thought that it would be an ideal time to give away some beautiful Kauni yarn that's been donated by Kay Connors. There are two skeins. They're in gorgeous pinks and purples, kind of a gradient sort of yarn. I posted photographs on a giveaway thread on the Yarns at Yinhu group, so you can take a look. And even though the skeins look different, I believe they are the same colorway. So you can take a look. and you can follow the prompt to post something sweet for your chance to win one or maybe both of these gorgeous skeins of yarn. In terms of posting something sweet, that could be literal or figurative. I will use a random number generator to select a winner, and I will do that near the beginning of February. I will generate a winner regardless of whether I'm recording a podcast that day, and I'll alert the winner because it occurs to me you may want this yarn in time to knit with it around Valentine's Day. The way I'll select a winner is to use the random number generator. Since there are two skeins of yarn, if the random number generator generates an even number, that number will win both skeins of this yarn. If it's an odd number, then that person will win one skein, and I'll generate yet another winner who will win the other skein. I will message you if you're the winner and ask for your mailing information so that I can get that out to you in the very beginning of February. And so forth. Last weekend, I worked quite a bit on the Birds of a Feather maxi skirt. This is a design by Anna Maria Horner, and I'm following a tutorial series on Creative Bug. I purchased all of the fabric, but I still have not laundered the fabric for the skirt. So I began work on these applique feathers, and it was quite a bit of work. In order to make these applique feathers, there are eight. I purchased six different kinds of rather coordinating batik prints, about, I think, a quarter yard to a half yard each. And I cut those into strips between 2 inches and 1 1/4 inches wide. Then I needed to strip piece that fabric together. The idea is that you make a fabric of different strips so that you can cut the feather pieces on an angle, sort of on the bias, and it gives the effect of feathers. It was a great practice to do all of that strip piecing because I just needed to sew straight line after straight line after straight line and not really worry about pinning, just trying to keep the two pieces right sides together and rather straight and run them through the machine. I didn't have to worry about changing thread. I used kind of a neutral thread that more or less matched the different prints that I selected. Great practice. Then I cut out all of the pieces, and then I cut the center spines of the feathers. I keep wanting to call them stems. I don't know why. And then very carefully, I joined the pieces right and left to the center spines. And then I did a lot of pressing to clean everything up, trimmed all of the threads, all of the loose ends, any places where it was bunching up a little bit, I trimmed that up, and I have the feathers completely ready to go. And I believe the next step with those applique pieces is that they're sewn with some base stitching onto the body of the skirt. So before I get the fabric laundered, I could work on making the paper pattern to my measurements so that I'm ready to cut the fabric when it's clean. In talking over the pattern with my mom, I discovered that there were a couple of omissions, I suppose, in the videotaped tutorial. She mentions cutting the fabric for the skirt on the bias and seemed to leave out quite a few steps, because when my mom explained to me how to do it, she had a lot more information than is provided in the video, and it seemed like crucial information, the kind that if you weren't paying attention, you would have used 3 yards of fabric to cut half of the skirt, and then you would have this all this fabric left, but it wouldn't be enough to cut the other side of the skirt. You really have to plan your bias cutting carefully and use the smallest amount possible in order to get your piece to fit. And I suppose if you were very tall, 3 yards might not be enough. And if you're a petite person, you might not need 3 yards of fabric. And there's no mention of that anywhere in the tutorial. The materials list on the tutorial also stated getting a half yard each of 5 or 6 different kinds of fabric. And that would be way overspending for the material needed for this strip piecing. I bought about 1/4 yard of 6 kinds, and I still have enough fabric left to make some tall, narrow bags for spindles or something like that. I only cut exactly what it would seem I needed. And then I thought, well, I'll cut into this a little bit more if I don't have enough to do the strip piecing that I need. So I don't know. It seems to err on the side of having more fabric rather than less, but that can be a little bit spendy. So I guess it's always helpful to have a clear idea of what you're making and the steps you'll need to go through before you purchase, because you may not need to adhere to the materials list or all of the instructions. If you know what you're doing, there are always workarounds. Nevertheless, I'm very pleased with the way the feathers have come out, and I have very high expectations for completing this skirt. This weekend is not a sewing weekend because I've been busy with the sheep to shawl class, but maybe the upcoming weekend will be an opportunity for me to work on the skirt a little bit more, and then probably one additional weekend to finish the applique work, which it seems to me will be quite slow to hand stitch these 8 feathers to the skirt. So I will keep you posted. Last weekend I worked on a few mending projects. Joanna Spring of the Knit Spin Farm podcast is hosting a make do and mend along. She's challenged her listeners to darn more socks than she will darn. And since I have only knit a few pairs of socks and I've given most of them away, I'm not in a place to darn any of my socks. My store-bought socks, I guess I'm not very hard on socks. I don't know. They don't have holes in them. They don't even have wear spots in them. So I guess I'm easy on my socks. So I couldn't participate in that part. But she also extended an invitation to mend anything rather than throw it away or buy a new one. And now that I have the sewing machine, it occurs to me that I can fix a few things that have been bugging me like crazy, and honestly, things I've thought about tossing and getting a new one because they weren't fixed. So the number one thing that's been driving me nuts is the belt to Samuel's terry cloth bathrobe came unstitched and started fraying all over the place. I didn't feel like hand sewing it, so I've just been ignoring it. And last weekend, I stitched it up with my sewing machine, good as new. I also mended a hole in my favorite flannel nightgown. It's a nightgown handmade by my mom, and it's probably, I think it's 10 years old. She made nightgowns for my sisters and I, grown-up nightgowns, for Christmas 1 year because we all said, "Mom, remember those flannel nightgowns that we used to wear? And we all want one." And she's like, "That's a lot of flannel. You're really tall now." But she made them. They're awesome. It's so warm and comfortable. And it had sprung a little tear in the seam, and I was able to fix it with my sewing machine. And finally, I mended a pillowcase that had come apart at the seam. It actually ripped in the seam, and so I needed to just fix it up a little bit, which was such an easy thing to do. So thank you, Joanna, for the inspiration to make do and mend rather than toss or buy a new one. It's been really fun to play along and to see what other listeners of the Knit Spin Farm podcast have been fixing. I think there were some Wellingtons that needed fixing, all different kinds of things. So it's a great thread. You should go over there and check it out. Finally, I'll announce the winner of the little zebra project bag that has been one of my practice sewing projects. It was the cover photo of the last episode, episode 66, and I posted on Ravelry, on the blog, and on the Facebook page for Yarns at Yinhu that there was a little contest going to win the bag that was pictured. And quite a few folks have made entries, so I just put everyone's name into a hat and drew Taffophile, who is Antoinette from Canberra in the Australian Capital Territory, Australia. So Antoinette, get in touch with me via Ravelry and let me know your mailing address so I can send out this adorable little zebra bag.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a rating or a review on iTunes, or liking the show's Facebook page, or joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. Music for today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.